Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Permaculture Central Blog Talk Radio episode for water harvesting techniques. And today we have Joey DeLeo with us. Joey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good today. A little tired, but that's just a hard day at work, so that's okay.
Well, I'm wondering, did you have enough water?
I drank 1 gallon. That might not have been enough. But, I've proceeded to drink more water since I got home.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I ran out of water, though, let's say that. And that's kind of what we don't want to have happen, especially when you're trying to grow food.
Well, and we picked the topic today because we've talked about it before, but we can never talk about it too much, especially where we live. But it's really, you know, a worldwide issue. And so water harvesting techniques. And I'll start with my story. Is I, you know, when I had my other house that I was living at, I went to some presentation at a local garden center, and they had a representative come out for one of these water tanks, a cistern. And it was quite fascinating because, you know, the company, they would send a rep out to your home and could, you know, absolutely for free, just tell you how to situate, you know, where would you put a tank if you need rain gutters, how much water they think that you could harvest. And, you know, so I was excited for the opportunity to even try it. And I know that some cities in California, you can actually get a rebate from your city. And I believe it's Santa Monica, a couple different cities. Don't quote me. But anyway, where I live, there was no such rebate. But there are some cities that were forward-looking, and you should probably look in your own municipality to see if they have any sort of rebates for getting these rain harvesting catchment systems. Anyway, so the guy told me what I could do, and there's a calculation that Joey can tell us. So, Joey, what's the calculation?
Oh, that calculation is so this is hard surface. If the rain falls on like a hard surface, like a roof or concrete or something, the runoff off of 1,000 square feet, so if 1 inch of level rainfall, 1 inch of rainfall falls on the roof, on 1,000 square feet of roof, cement, or dirt, that's equal to, like, I think it's 632 gallons of water. So the fascinating part about that is, even if you live in a dry land environment, usually the amount of rain that falls on your roof, you couldn't capture all of it in containers unless you had some massive storage containers.
Right. So my house is 1,000 square feet, or, you know, the one I was living in. But, you know, when you pitch the roof at a pitch, you know, the roof is actually bigger than 1,000 square feet. And my situation, I could only capture the rain off of a very small portion of the roof. And I don't know exactly how much, but it was certainly less than 1,000 square feet. It was basically over this porch and part of another part of the roof. And so they came out. I was very excited to do it. They installed it on Friday. It was almost a year ago. That was in October. And the very next day, it was 2 years ago. Yeah. The very next day, overnight, it rained. And I bought two 865-gallon tanks. And they're connected at the bottom. So when they fill from the bottom going up, both at the same time. And literally, I go out there the next day and I check the tanks. And they were both half full, which means I collected about 865 gallons in one rainfall, and that was not my entire roof. I mean, I had so much more roof than I could have, but I didn't have space to put these tanks. So what Joey is saying is you'd have to have huge, huge tanks in order to collect all this rain. And where we live, in Oceanside, we get about 11 to 12 inches a year. And so every little bit counts, but I'm telling you, I was t- tickled to death, and from October until April, those tanks were full the entire time because it kept raining, you know, off and on throughout the season. And, you know, I have at that property, at, you know, well over 50 fruit trees that were being watered when needed. So, you know, it's incredible what a little bit of effort can do. All right. But so that's one thing I was doing. And just other things is just being aware of water consumption. So you can do different things, like if you're rinsing out your a glass, you know, or washing some dishes, you can save that extra water in a container next to your sink and then walk outside and, you know, water your plants with it. Or you could do gray water systems, which Joey can talk about later. But just in my own little, without a lot of effort, the main thing I did was the water collection from the roof through the rain gutters. And because I didn't have space, something that I did is I actually stored the storage tanks in my garage. So it came off the roof, and we poked a hole into the garage and sealed it up so nothing can get through like animals. And it just went directly in. Now, I did have to, you know, basically use up one car space so that, you know, I couldn't park in there on that side, but there was room for one more car. But it was willing, absolutely worth it to me to sacrifice that because the trees and the plants love rainwater. It's much healthier for them because it doesn't have all the salts and fluoride and all these chemicals that they put in the water. And so that was a great thing. Then inside the house, you know, I installed low-flow toilets. I got the best you can get, and I made sure all my shower heads were low-flow. And I would keep a bucket in the shower, and I would turn on the hot water, and it would take a while for the hot water to come, so any extra cold water I'd put in the bucket and take that outside. But the other thing is I installed when my hot water heater finally broke, I installed a tankless hot water. And that absolutely conserved a lot of energy. And I really believe that it helped me save on water consumption too, because it immediately heats the water to a very high degree. You don't have to wait for it to get hot. Whatever water's in the pipe from the tank to you, you know, your shower, that still comes out, but it doesn't, it's very quick, very rapid. So that was another, I'm sure that helped me save water and also energy. My energy bill went in half when I put in that tankless water heater. All right, so Joey, tell us more.
Oh boy, more and more and more. So the reason why the topic today came up is because here in San Diego right now, where we're in September, so October comes, and it's kind of like our first potential rain time, and it gets me real, real antsy. I get what kind of new thing, what am I going to do? What's the strategy? Because the water is coming, and it's not, it's going to come, and then it's going to come for, you know, whatever, here in San Diego, Southern California, it's going to come like October a little bit, we'll get some, November, December, January, and then maybe not anymore. Maybe some, you can get February, but it's the bulk of it's going to come in December, January, November-ish time. And
it's sporadic. You really can't say, oh, it's going to rain all month. It's nothing like that. It'll rain for a couple hours and then stop. And, you know, it's, now, sometimes we do get major rains, but as far as like standard, it's kind of hard to predict when you
say. Yeah, and that's the part that like gets me all riled up a bit, because it could come down for 2 hours and you could get a heavy bulk of your rain for the season in those 2 hours or in those 3 hours overnight, you know, for like 4 hours on and off, it'll be like, and you'll get a lot you could get 2 inches. That's a lot of rain for us in one period, and I just can't live with myself if I miss something like that. So the first thing we did when we got here was we moved in, and then we put the swale in. We moved in June 26th was our first day here. But that was like 2011 or 2012 or something. I don't know. 2 years ago. And first thing that November, we put a swale in. And it was when we were finishing building the swale, the next day on Sunday it started raining. And we finished the swale and it proceeded to water, you know, proceeded to fill into it on the preceding week and this and that. But, I mean, it's like that. And that happened. We put the swale in. And then I also worked on some rain gutters. But I didn't have any tanks yet. So the next winter, last winter, I didn't put any new, water harvesting, earthworks in, but I had put mulch. I had almost covered the whole 2.5 acres by the next winter. My goal was to cover as much of the dirt as I could with mulch, because that's another real great strategy, is if you can put mulch down, you can hold more water in the soil, because the water will hold into the mulch, and then the mulch also actually makes the soil come alive, and so you get some more porosity and start creating some humus layer, and then you can absorb more water. So that's a strategy also. So I got super amped. I went and talked to some guys I knew, and we got to be better friends, and they owned a giant tree company, and they came and just dumped truckload after truckload, and I mean like a 40-yard container truckloads of this ground-up mulch from some big tub grinding machines is what they're called, and they would just dump it all, just kept dumping it, and they would go how much more do you want, kind of tease me, and I said, give me more, and they just kept going and going, and that winter, or before that winter came, I proceeded to, this would be the second winter, we proceeded to, or was it even in that winter? Oh, see, I get pretty pumped. I know the mulch wasn't completely down by the second winter, or it's all a blur now. But I started putting tanks down. I went and bought, let's just say it like this, went out and bought, found a deal for those IBC International Bulk Containers, those 275-gallon totes. You see people using them for aquaponics, for rainwater harvesting, all sorts of different things. So I bought a bunch of those, started putting up more rain gutters, went out and bought rain gutters, did all that, downspouts into these tanks, you know, boom, boom, keep trying to fill those up, monitor them, because I didn't have a sophisticated system. I would just move this big, fill a tank up and move the big flexible hose for the downspout from the rain gutters into another tank, or I'd have these little trough systems with I had all sorts of contraptions going on, because I was just between building this demonstration site and going to work and having fun with the kids and hanging out with my wife and stuff, you're just doing whatever I could to get water in containers, get it into the soil with the earthwork, and then so now we're here. And I'm getting pumped up. I'm even getting pumped up right now that I'm talking about it with all you guys.
Well, and that was the point of the show, because we need to prepare, because there's still more to do. He has more tanks that need to be set up, and he's putting gray water and all kinds of other stuff. But what's interesting is it happened to both of us. There's the old saying, if you build it, they will come. So I had my tanks put in, and literally the next day they were – it rained overnight, and there was water in my tanks. And Joey put in his swale, and the next day, overnight, it rains. And you should take a look at Joey's YouTube channel. What is that, Joey? He has a video of the swale with water, and it's kind of hard to tell perspective because it looks just like a ditch with water. But if you come to our farm, you can see what an enormous ditch it is, and it's quite impressive to see how much water that's harvested. What's your YouTube channel?
Joey D'Elia.
Joey D'Elia, D-E-L-I-A, on YouTube. And it's, right, very impressive.
Well, it's just, it was just impressive because I had never built one before. I'd studied it and stuff, and I knew I wanted to build one. So when I got this property, I was like, well, I better build one. And it was funny, though. I had somebody, like some guy come over that knows about, that's familiar with permaculture, and he's like, oh, and I told him, I'm going to build this swale right here. And he's like, well, it doesn't rain enough here for a swale. But if you've seen Greening the Desert, that's the that's a dry land strategy, is to build a swale. So I didn't, I just said, oh, all right, well, that's cool. I think I'll listen to Jeff Lawton. And so anyways, proceeded to build the swale.
Well, try explain for people who might not know what a swale is. So kind of,
it could be hard talking over this radio, but everybody has a computer by them lots of times, so you might be able to just bring up another page. Because on Jeff Lawton's Green in the Desert video, he has a good little diagrams of a swale. And I think there's even a YouTube video Jeff Lawton has where there's drawings and stuff of a swale and how it works. But if you've seen those lines on a contour map or on a map, where
topographic map.
Yeah, where they have the lines and it shows the terrain and it has little elevations where it says like 300 or 400. Well, that line is level. So everywhere that line is where it says, if it says 300 on the line, it's 300 feet in elevation. Well, imagine that line. Let's say we have a slope somewhere around our house or on the side of a hill. Well, imagine one of those lines along the side of a slope. And you see how it's all curvy and things because it follows the landscape. But it's completely dead, like level. And the idea with the swale is to dig a trench. And say you're looking up the hill. You want to dig the trench and kind of throw the dirt downhill in a little mound. So you're digging a trench, but all the dirt from the trench, you pile up downhill.
Well, you pull toward you slowly, and it just kind of makes a mound.
Yeah.
Is that
right? Or if you were using a shovel or something, you'd be shoveling and throwing the dirt downhill.
Yeah. But not too far, because you're trying to create a mound, which you later plant on.
Right. And that mound is there also to for the water to sit up against and soak into. And what happens is you make that level, and when the water comes down the hill or from wherever source, maybe you have so let's just say the water fills up into there and slows down because it's pacified, because it's level. It's completely level, so the water can very slowly move. Maybe some water piles up in one area from some runoff or from something. Well, that's okay because it goes in there and it'll spread out evenly over that level surface. And then the water is just the swale is meant to just hold the water in there and let it soak down. It's not a dam. It's not meant to hold water for a long, long period of time. It's meant to just hold it there and let it soak, give it time so it just doesn't fly down the hill. It's meant to be there to just let the water soak into the ground. And the idea with the trees, because the swale is a tree-growing system, so the idea is the trees are downhill from the swale just a little bit, just on the other side near the mound or on the mound, and those trees will drink the water that's underground now. And it takes time, but it happens, and it keeps happening, and it's happening at our house now. And I'm Jeff Lawton, and Bill, they talk about 7 years being a number that they've seen after the swales fill up over 7 years of rainy seasons, the soil underneath reaches a saturation point and becomes fully hydrated. So that's just a little tidbit there. But we put the swale in. Now back to me getting antsy here now, because I'm getting it again here. That
control yourself now.
I'm trying. So, because now I'm sitting talking about this. It's easier to think about this and go do something. So part of the thing that's adding to the wildness of this antsiness for me is that I built it. We added onto the barn and built a shop for the tools and stuff. Well, that's a whole new roof. And I took down parts of the rain gutters to extend part of this roof. So that's just like kind of, I don't know if I'm going to try to mess around with trying to fix that. Because rain gutters are super important. Because even if you can put them up, and even if you don't direct them into a tank, let's talk about tankless strategies here too, because the swale is one of them. For instance, in this case, the one side of the barn is going to be, I'm trying to relieve some of the pressure I'm building for myself and just come up with the idea that those rain gutters on one side that aren't completely hooked up anymore are going to go, just have little downspouts that go out into the swale, not into tanks. And that the one rain gutter that's still intact, because now, well, I'll just say it. When Paul moved, I kind of went and took the tanks out of his house.
What?
Yeah, and he knows.
Oh,
and,
what?
We took the tanks out of his house because the people there didn't, they're renters. They totally don't even eat the fruit off his fruit trees. So,
well, they probably wanted to park the car in the garage.
That's what they did. Yeah. They wanted to put a bunch of stuff in there. So we took the tanks there. Now, my charge is now to set those tanks up. So I've got one location sited already for one tank, and I've got another location sited for the other tank. Just got to get them into position. Both locations, the rain gutters are all intact. So it's not going to be horribly intense, but there's these places I haven't put rain gutters up yet, and I'm really want to put the rain gutters on there, and I want to take some of the water and divert it to certain spots. I want to do some different creative things, like mini earthwork things, because I don't have enough tanks to put everywhere, but even so, this is getting wild again because I'm getting too excited. So some of the tanks, even like Paul was talking about in the beginning, even an 865 gallon tank is going to fill up and it's going to overflow. Where is the overflow going to go? So already I know on one tank the overflow is going to go into the swale because they're in the same kind of area. The other tank is not near the swale per se. So I'd like to dig like a depression, like a mulch basin or something. But just if you ever start harvesting water and you just see the volume of water that comes off the roofs and how fast a 275 gallon, let's just say, tote fills up, that's just insane. It's so crazy because it's pure runoff off the roofs. And so even a 55-gallon drum is just like, that's nothing. So the overflow potentially from a full tank is pure runoff of your roof. So whatever you're going to put that overflow in to, ideally, I mean, the idea is not to lose potentially at some point. You know, you got to work towards this. We are here. Is not to lose one drop of water off your property. The idea is to get all the water that falls from the sky to soak into the ground, basically. I mean, I would say if there's like a crazy torrential rain, you know, crazy thing going on, some things just reach capacity. But that gives you an insight into maybe you have the potential to build a dam and store more water, but depending on how big your property is. This case here is like, let's just say you have a suburban house and you fill up a tank. Let's say you fill up a 275-gallon tote. Maybe you have four of them. They're going to all fill up. And then what do you do with the overflow? Do you just run it to the drain that runs it out to the curb, to the front of the house? Or is there other ways, is there somewhere else you can soak it into the ground? And that's what you got to kind of think about. Brad Lancaster has a great book that talks about different strategies for that. So that's what we're, you just start thinking about it. You just start doing the numbers, and if you're interested, of course, you know, in water and harvesting it, because it may seem that you're not going to get much effect, because especially if you live in where we live in Southern California, because you're going to go into the summer and it's going to be so dry, and there's not going to be any rain falling from the sky except for condensation. Basically, it's not falling from the sky, but it's condensing on all the leaves and whatnot around your place. But you can't see it, but when you do try to get the water to sit on the soil and sit in certain areas and just soak into the ground, doing that over years changes the hydrology of your soil. It changes how much water is in there. And it does. It makes a difference. And you keep doing it, and say your tote filled up and it overflowed, instead of going to your drain right away that went out to the curb, it kind of went into a pit that you dug. Or maybe you dug a swale. But the swale was never really like a swale that could potentially harvest a lot of water just off the dirt. But it could be a swale to hold the overflow from, at least hold it for a while so that it could soak into the ground, and maybe have another swale. And a lot of your swales that you make don't fill up from, you know, from just overland water over the dirt or any, like coming off the dirt or anything. It comes from the overflow from, or just purely from your rain gutters. Maybe you can't buy tanks. Maybe you don't have enough money, or maybe they don't fit, but you can fit some swales in. Or you can fit some mulch basin pits in. And you can start doing these pits. And you dig out the dirt and you put mulch in there, and it's a basin, and you can have the water flow into there from your rain gutters and maybe flow into another pit, and around those pits you plant things. These are some strategies. And so why I'm talking about it too is that I'm thinking about doing some of those types of things in some certain areas. So I can just keep slowing down the water. Now, I haven't even talked about it, because now I'm going to get super excited and antsy, because the idea is that, well, why do I want to put another swale in before the winter come, or before these rains come? And it's getting super close right now.
Well, I was going to say, did you notice this morning it was so foggy.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Everything was moist outside. And
stop it.
It's a sign that the season's starting to change. The season's starting to change.
I know. I woke up this morning and I got outside and I was like, oh gosh, that's what it's going to look like. It's coming. And the swale isn't in. But so I
well, the other funny thing, Joey, I'm going to interject right now. Is,
oh, boy.
When it does rain, Joey's like a little kid. Even at 3 in the morning, he'll go outside and he wants to see his swale in action. He wants to make sure that he's capturing every drop of water, because it is very exciting. And like when I had mine, I'm like, oh, my gosh, it was the best investment I ever made, because it's so precious. It's a resource that, especially where we live, all of our water that we drink and use comes from other states. It does not come from where we live.
Well, and that's just touching on that real quick before I get into the swale part, is that in Australia, when I was at Jeff Lawton's and we were supposed to do our PDC, we're doing our design project. PDC is a permaculture design certificate course. And matter of fact, we're going to be having one here in March. So that'll be fun here at Tipawana Farm. The deal, though, is that I was in charge of the water systems for this house project that we were doing. So one thing I was thinking about, and what I like to think about here, is if you just, even if you just caught enough water in tanks to provide you drinking water for the year. Now, if you drank 1 gallon of water a day, that'd be 365 gallons that you would use. You know, let's just say we're not counting for that you would drink the water while it's raining and it would fill right back up. Let's just say 365 gallons of water. Almost everyone, some apartments, condos even, or, you know, you could store that much water. And that's something cool to think about, that you could catch your drinking water. So, and it's not bad water.
Well, when I was on Guam, every single day it would rain, and they had a manual technique. So they had the big cistern, and it had a lid on it, and they'd let it rain for like 10 minutes, and they'd take the lid off, and the water would go directly into the cistern. They didn't filter it or anything, because it rained so much it kept the roofs of the houses clean, and I thought it was delicious. Now, I haven't tried our rainwater to drink, but anyway.
Tastes good to me. I've been drinking it.
Sure.
And you can always, and then we have so many filtering options. You know, we can filter whatever water we want, however we want. There's all sorts of different passive. I think we actually, Paul had a filtration system that we've been using here. It's a gravity feed. You just put water in the top, and it filters through these ceramic, like clay filters, and you get water that won't make you sick. So, out of the bottom. But, you know, that. So, somebody keeps. One of my friends, a permaculture acquaintance, or permaculture friend, always says, "Oh, what should I do? What should I do?" I said, "Do you have rain gutters yet?" "Oh, no." And then I'll see the person again, and they'll say, "Oh, what do you think I should do for water harvesting at my house?" I said, "Did you put up the rain gutters yet?" "Oh, no." So the idea that, and it's not that it's a pure lack of money, but it's just that idea of, well, maybe the idea is, I haven't pinpointed it exactly with my friend here, if it's that they just don't conceive of what the potential, like water, the water potential for the soil is. Because if you think about it too, if you're watering with city water for a long time, and our city water here that we use is, like Paul was saying, it's got chlorine, fluoride, it's got some other stuff in it, and it's got
heavy salts sometimes.
So you've got some elements in there. If you could get the rainwater off your roof and at least rinse it out into the yard in a nice way, you'll push a lot. You'll like clean your soil. You'll just give it a full yummy bath of pure rainwater, ionized yumminess, and get that to saturate through your soil and give your each, you know, winter. Well, winter for us, you know, other climates, it's summer rain, but you would give it a nice rinse. So it's super important. The swale now because of this morning, like Paul was saying, he's just teasing me because he's getting me riled up. That is making me... This swale has to go in.
Well, the tanks need to go in, Joey.
The tanks.
Joey says, "You don't need those tanks. We're taking the tanks. We're going to put them up here on the farm." I'm like, "Okay." Well, I literally thought like that day he was going to install them. It has been months.
We like,
and we've even had rain since I've been here. So, you know, at night that he is not admitting to. But, oh well.
Yeah.
One good thing about our farm is it's not covered in concrete. Because when you live in the city, that's the problem. We cement everything, the driveways and all these things, and for some reason our municipalities think you got to get it away from the land, and they're taking all this water. It comes off your roof, goes out your driveway, into the gutters, down a storm drain, and eventually, in California at least, it goes down into the ocean. All that fresh water leaves, and it's ridiculous. So if you have extra concrete, like a patio or something that's not needed, you could take that out, and that water would go directly onto the land where Mother Nature wants it to go.
Well, that totally reminds me of when I was a kid. I grew up in a place called Laverne. It's up near Claremont, Pomona, here in Southern California. It's right in the foothills of these. Some of the peaks are like 9,000. There's a place called Mount Baldy that's 10,000. But we're in the foothills, and what they would do is, oh my gosh, all through L.A., L.A. has, the L.A. River is just this giant cement channel.
Yeah, it's a channel. They call it a river, as if it's a natural river.
Like, because it was a river.
It was, but anyway.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah, they put these giant cement channels in everywhere that go, like, kind of up to the foothills, and they handle all the stormwater runoff. I remember standing over those things, and it's like 2 feet deep, just maybe 30 feet across, just a enormous flow of water, and just raging water through these cement channels everywhere in the city of all the runoff. And it's just like, that's all rainwater. And it's so crazy, you know, living in the desert area and just going, no, we don't want any of that water to soak in anywhere. We want it to run down a cement channel, pass all the trees, all the soil, and just ship it out. Get it away, far away as you can. And I think, once again, I'm going to say it again, for our dry land climate down here in San Diego area and stuff, in Southern California in general, it's discounted. Because it's dry land, you know, or it's a desert here or something, which it's not here in this part of Southern California, in San Diego and parts of L.A., because the hills are not jaggedy like they are in the real desert. They're rounded. And that shows that water shapes those hills. They're rounded.
We have places that have year-round water, little creeks and things. And they're having studies, and Joey can tell more about this, that there's enough water in Los Angeles, if we were to collect it, we do not have to import it from another state.
Yeah, there's crazy numbers they're pushing now, and they're talking about. And the same, I mean, those numbers, so this is something too, distributed energies, distributed stuff, where there's potentials, and when people are ready, where, just like the water falling on the city in L.A., like if they put sophisticated systems in to capture it and reclaim it and stuff, which they're going to need to one day anyways, because shipping it when they start trying to ship it from Washington, you know, in a big pipe is still going to be expensive. And they start capturing all, the same thing happens with energy. Water is energy, but with the sun, the water's falling from the sky, and the sun is falling from the sky on all these roofs. If there's individual solar panels everywhere, there would be no need for this sophisticated grid. Well, it's not so sophisticated anymore. It's actually getting very old and outdated, and there will continually have more problems with it. But the generating plants just won't have to be on basically during the day. You know, at full throttle, they can turn them basically off or slow them down and then fire them up later. But besides that, let's get back to the swale.
We can talk about that, but, you know, just to give LA a couple thumbs up is, I think, some of their colleges, they've completely made them 100% solar, and they're generating enough electricity to, you know, operate this. So, I mean, we're way behind countries like Germany and other places where solar is a priority. But I think because California, you know, we're so limited on our resources. But one of the things that we do have is sun. So I'm glad that LA is doing that. And the whole this, I think that's going to help them get closer to the water harvesting as well. Because well, it's like, well, we've done this for solar. Now we can start doing it for the water.
Well, and they have the, that reminds me of the solar part, is that we have a new friend that we've made that that's going to come here to the farm, and he's going to demonstrate how to build your own, you know, generator, your own solar generator.
That's not tied into the grid.
Yes, and that's very simple. He's developing free plans to give to the planet. He's doing a small unit right now he's working on that's portable. And then he's also working on a home system that you build yourself. And he's gonna give a free class here. I think we're gonna take donations for our nonprofit Evoke Hope. That's gonna hopefully we're gonna give keep you know go forward. And I think he's gonna bring. He's bringing a model up here for us to test out and to try, and then we're gonna do a class, and he's gonna teach everybody, and he's really excited, talented guy, so that'll be fun.
All right, that's upcoming.
Yeah, that's upcoming. So the swale. So
yes.
I gotta put this. I just want to put this swale in, and I'm having. Now, I may be wrong, and that's okay, but I have a feeling that this winter is going to be very rainy and wet.
I'm feeling that.
So there's two swales I'd like to put in, and if it... Okay, so listen... I'm telling you right now that there's a... We just met a guy. Well, I didn't know him before, but my other friend knew him. His name's Dakota, and he's... told me that he works for this company or this man, and they have an excavator. And now on the last swale, I rented one, and then I've been playing with the idea of buying one, but that the money's not there for that yet. So Dakota came along and said, "Oh, you want to build?" I said, "I want to build a swale." But he's like, "Oh, well, I could bring the tractor over." And he knows how to run it really good. See, I don't know how to run it really good, but I can run it enough to move the dirt the way I want it to go. So if somebody's running it that's really good, they can do it so much faster. So the potential is that we could get this one big swale in, and it would be the longest contour at the highest boundary for us. That I can access, that would access this. Okay, so on the side of the hill here, north or south of me, is a slope, and there's a valley. And the potential is that the swale will be able to accept a lot of the water that comes down that valley, because I'll dig like a big pit, and it'll kind of go into the pit from the valley and then overflow into the swale. And the swale will be catching water that comes down this other part of a slope. But then if I can get that valley water and just kind of ask it nicely to just move over into the swale, that would take the water all the way. Oh, you'd have to come here and see it, but it would just take the water from this one point, and instead of it just running down off this weird little road that somebody put in and a long time ago, and down to the creek, eventually, it would run into that swale and soak in this whole back hill, and then it would overflow on a whole nother side, like on a ridge. It would overflow, I'd overflow it near the ridge, and then it would put the water, it would have moved the water from that valley passively on that level contour in the swale, overflowed it onto this ridge area. It would then it if it overflowed so much that it came down, then eventually it would overflow and spill into this one flat area that we have, and then eventually contribute to the water that goes into the next swale. And when the first swale we put in, and then when we put the third swale I want to put in, well, I want to do two swales this winter. That's the idea. If Dakota will run the tractor, then it will go a lot faster. And then we put the third swale in. So if the first swale that's the highest overflows, it will overflow, and potentially if it overflows enough, it'll go into the second swale. And if the second swale happens to overflow, because if I direct a lot more of the rain gutters and the downspouts into that area, then and overflow pits and really try to get it going pretty good, that swale, second swale, could potentially overflow, and it would overflow into the food forest passively, and then it would go down into the third swale, and that third swale would also catch the runoff from part of a road, part of the driveway, and before, and then that last swale would overflow into the creek. So, and if filling up all those swales, because I think I talked about this last time because this is exciting too, is we'll just keep charging up our hand dug well. That's right. We hand dug a well, and we just dug it deeper the other day. So now it's, the water is 3 feet deep in there. And I'm not sure how, the well I think is now 8 feet deep, or maybe 10, 8 feet or 10 feet. But there's 3 feet of water now. So in the bottom of it. And so any of those swales that are holding up water higher in the landscape and letting it soak into the ground, you have to understand when it soaks into the ground, it starts to, because the gravity wants to pull it down as far as it can go down straight in the ground, and then it hits the, you know, those impermeable layers under the ground of rock and different things, and then the water turns. Going straight down, it turns and starts to go downhill, but downhill underground, the way things are shaped, and it ends up seeking the creek. And right now, where we dug the well was down by the creek, and you can see the water now that we dug down so deep. The water was just coming out of one part of the wall, one spot in the wall of the well. But now we're down far enough that we've reached this sandy kind of gravelly stuff, and the water is infiltrating into the well from all sides. So that, if you imagine that, that's kind of the creek flowing underground, and it's a lot wider than you'd think it'd be. Because the little creek that runs in the winter is just this little, maybe 4 feet, 3 foot wide little creek, but we're quite a distance away from that, and it's flowing underground. There's a flow under there. Those swales holding that water for longer and longer will charge that well, charge that creek. And if you can put this into some big situations, key line, which is a great strategy, key line trenches, swales. If you can hold the water. Well, dams, even little tiny dams, ridge point dams, contour dams, valley dams. If you can have those up high in the landscape too, all that water soaking into the ground will eventually makes its way to the creek. And when you start doing those, when you have those kind of strategies in place, it allows the creeks to run longer because there's more flow underground, but you don't see it. The trees find it, though. And that's what's really important too. That's with key line. If we're not familiar with that, you use a tool called a subsoiler. Usually it's pulled behind a tractor. And that subsoiler rips lines, mini grooves, into the side of a, let's say, slope, hill, or it can be in flat ground too, but you're. Those lines are not on contour. They're falling. what they call falling. They go from a valley to a ridge. And the idea with the key line is to hydrate ridges. And that's what it really does. And when water hits the ridges underground, it soaks into a ridge and then deflects underground back to the valley. So you get this very nice hydrating kind of effect over a lot of surface of the soil. That's something to look up. Definitely look up those swales, key line, and those are two great strategies. For broadacre, swales can be done in the small areas of your houses and soak pits. You're not really putting in key line in your suburban home, but you could definitely put in some swales and soak pits.
So speaking of the urban home, I just did a search for California water rebates, and I found a website called SoCalWaterSmart.com. There's several websites, but there are over 35 different water municipalities, I guess they're called, that are participating and giving different rebates within Southern California. And so for indoor products, it says qualifying products, you can put in high-efficiency clothes washers. They use 55% less water than the standard clothes washer. And it says less water means less energy needed for the water heating, lowering your energy bill too. The rebates start at $85. They have high-efficiency toilets. You can get up to a $50, or starting at a $50 rebate per toilet that you install. And it says outdoors. It says up to 70% of California's entire residential water supply is applied to home landscapes. So 70% of the water that we're using in California is to water plants. And if we use techniques like mulching and the other things that we've talked about tonight, you know, we could significantly cut that down. But another thing that it's saying is that they'll give you a rebate on a weather-based irrigation controller. So it's a sensor that knows when how moist the soil is, and also if it's raining, it'll turn off your water systems. And you can get $80 per controller for less than an acre of landscape and $25 per station for more than an acre. You also get rebates for rotating sprinkler nozzles. It says apply more water slowly and uniformly to prevent overwatering and encourage healthy plant growth. Use 20% less water, and I know Joey's going to mention something that's probably better than this, but you can get rebates up to $4 a nozzle, and you have to put in at least 15 nozzles to get a rebate on that. And then they have other incentives. If you remove your lawn, it says replace your irrigated lawn with drought-tolerant plants and other approved landscape options, and you can have a rebate of up to a dollar per square foot.
What?
Of turf removed. Yes.
Wow.
So that's at SoCalWaterSmart.com, and they have a list of qualifying products, and you have to see if your water municipality is on the list. But so that's that. So, Joey, tell us about Netafim, because that's a good thing too, isn't it?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a drip line with emitters that are embedded in it, so you don't have to have, like, little things, little hoses everywhere and stuff like that. So Netafim, but the rotating nozzles they were talking about, are the best ones out there right now are MP rotators.
Okay.
And those are made by Hunter now, and they mimic rainfall. They make everything into little droplets. They're super efficient. Great way to put water down. I use them parts of our food forest. I also use a mix. I use those on one part of the food forest, the MP rotators, rotating nozzles. They work at real low pressure. They don't use a lot of water, but with any nozzle, you have to understand how you have to learn, just like the rainfall, learning how much rainfall comes down and what are you going to do with it. With these nozzles, with the drip system, then you need to understand how much of the soil, like how much depth of the soil you're going to water with these systems, especially these efficient ones, because they're precise. It says you know, it waters a gallon a minute. That's what it does over a certain area, a surface area, and it'll exactly tell you also how deep it'll water in 10 minutes. And that's something super important with these drip systems, because they don't put out a high volume, which a lot of spray heads put out like 4 gallons a minute. And you'll just spray and it'll just soak in the ground potentially a lot. There's usually a lot of runoff involved in that too. But you're inundating the water into there. Like, you run the system for 4 minutes or 10 minutes and you think, oh, that's not that long. Well, that was 40 gallons of water that came out of one nozzle. And that's usually in a lawn we're talking about. And I've been to a lot of houses, because in our place we have clay soil. And something to think about too, when you're harvesting rain and you're digging your pits or you're going to dig a swale, you need to understand what type of soil you have. And if you, let's say you're going to dig a big mulch basin pit and you're going to dig it and you have clay soil, you need to fill up an area, or you dig a little hole and put water in it and see how fast the water, what is called percolate, see how fast the water moves through the soil. So to understand, if you did put a bunch of rainwater in there, how fast would it soak in? Because if it doesn't soak in fast, you got to understand where you should have it go from there. And when I'm talking about these lawns with these irrigation systems and these heads and stuff.
Oh, man. It died. No, it's mine, too. Well, if you can hear us, everyone, we're at the end of the show. Unfortunately, we think our network died. And I was going to mention the Permaculture Voices conference that's coming in March. And if you go to permaculturevoices.com, there's awesome speakers. The keynotes are Jeff Lawton, Toby Hemingway, Paul Wheaton, Alan Savory, Michael Pollan, Joel Salatin, and Elaine Ingham. And it's sure to be an incredible conference with these very important leaders within the industry. So, Joey, thank you. I don't know if this is being recorded or not, but just say goodnight, Joey.
Goodnight, everybody.
Thank you. All right. Bye.